It's fine. So, we've been talking about adding light to your life, and I mean that was kind of like what I left it at is more as adding light. But in regard, we're quickly talking about tshuva, but within a process of growth. So let's see what Rav Kook is saying. We're on Kaf Bet. You're going to need to have both pages. כשאדם שב בתשובה ואיננו מניח את תשובתו, אף על פי שיש בידו דברים המעכבים את התשובה, שנדמה לו שאין יכול לשוב עליהם, ומכל מקום מאוחז בעיונות התשובה, סוף סוף יבוא גם כן לשוב מאותם הדברים המעכבים את התשובה. The last time we spoke about how nothing should stop you from doing tshuva. Rav Kook says like this, when a person returns, is returning to God, and is not discarding tshuva, not letting anything bring him down, even though he has things that should really stop a person from doing tshuva, right? And we spoke about this at the end, after the recorder ended last class, but spoke about this a lot. You know, what does it mean there's tshuva? What does it mean that, you know, you're going to erase the past? You can't erase the past, right? A normal person would say, listen, there are certain things you can't do tshuva for, right? If you, I don't know, ate without a bracha, didn't get up for bed, I don't know, stole some money, you can give that money back. You killed somebody, you can't give that soul back. You do not have the power to revive the dead. So how do you do tshuva for things that you can't do tshuva for, right? I mean, one of the things that the Chazal say that is the that you can never do, sort of, lechora, right? One of the things that was mentioned.
Is something about somebody when they die?
No, is that is Chilul Hashem. Why? Because you can never return the bad name of God that you made. You don't know how many people are influenced by the Chilul Hashem that you've done, right? You stole and somebody saw you stealing. Oh, all those Jews. So now, every single Jew in the world has been affected by your action. So how can you revert that? You can't revert. There are certain things that can't be reversed. You just can't reverse them. So what's going on? So Rav Kook says here something profound. Even if you do tshuva, no matter what, even though there are those things that are stopping you from doing tshuva, that should discredit your tshuva process, right? Meaning, for example, you know, there are questions, Chazal say that God hardened Paro's heart. Why? So Paro can't do tshuva. Right? But lechora, imagine if we say tshuva, everybody can do tshuva. Imagine Hitler, yimach shmo v'zichro, 5 seconds before he dies in his bunker, does tshuva like Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya. Real MS dick tshuva. Then he goes to heaven with all the 6 million people he killed. That's crazy. That can't happen.
If it's real MS dick tshuva.
Wait, yeah, it's said, I'm not getting it.
How could it be real for him?
It's fine. So you're telling me you can't. I'm saying, you know, theoretically. Now again, I'm just saying, it's crazy, right? How could there are certain things that should stop a person from doing tshuva? Yeah, we know that nothing can stop you from doing tshuva. Nothing. Right? Nothing. Right? And we spoke about that concept of the Berdichever who went to the Yid and said, you know, I want to buy in to be your chassid now because when you do tshuva, you're going to be the greatest, right? At the end of the day. So first of all, there's something we have to understand about tshuva. Tshuva, Rav Steinsaltz has a profound book on tshuva, recommended for everybody. But he speaks about this concept. He says tshuva is the easiest thing we see in Judaism. It's the easiest thing. How do I know it's the easiest thing? A person who says to a girl, "Herefore, you're married to me based on the fact that I'm a holy tzaddik," right? Person says, "Haradim gudishle menachani tzaddik gomer." Here's a what?
And he's not a tzaddik gomer.
Right, and he's not. But he says, "I'm menachani tzaddik gomer." We say mekudesh and misafik. There's safik kedushin. Why? Maybe he did tshuva. That's what second when he said it. I'm a tzaddik gomer. He did tshuva. Wow. What do you mean tshuva in that second? Right. But then again, we see that tshuva is the hardest process. We have to do it our whole life. Right. So Rav Steinsaltz said a beautiful analogy. He goes, getting on the right path is a moment choice. Walking that path is a lifetime journey. Right. If I'm on the wrong road to, I don't know, success, getting on the right road
to Uma
is a second. It's a choice that instead of taking a right, taking a left. Instead of getting on this exit, taking the next exit. It's a second choice to get off the highway. Yet, you have to drive on that road for your life. So tshuva is this concept that is not, it's instantaneous. And in one split second, a person can decide that he's changing his life. But then it's a whole life journey to travel that path.
So we have to understand it as both?
Yes. Yes.
So how is it?
So it's 1 second that I decide that I'm going to stop saying Lashon Hara. But then it's a lifetime decision to continue on that path.
When I'm presented with the opportunity to do it and then I don't do it, that's just continuing it. But the first step is saying that I'm going to do it.
Right. So, right?
Why would he be considered a tzaddik gomer just because he started the path? He hasn't gone through, he hasn't done any of the
Does, which means that at that moment he's going to
just get
fail later.
Just getting on the highway is a decision.
So why follow the path for the rest of the time? Why not just last minute of your life? Just genuinely.
Oh, so what would Chazal say? Right? When a person says, I'm going to do tshuva the last minute of my life, that last minute will take him by surprise. Right? He won't have the opportunity to do it.
Wow. That's
right? He's never going to realize.
Where's that from?
Mishnah in Yoma says, wow.
Is there any difference in value?
Not in Yoma, in Mishnah.
Is there any difference in value between starting to go on the path and actually following it through the rest of your life?
What's the question?
Is there any difference in value? I mean, like,
It's both. There's the moment I have to make. That moment that I have to make that decision, right? The moment that I have to make that decision to get on the highway, to turn onto this path. Then I have to drive on the highway. Just because I got on the highway doesn't mean it's going to get me to my destination, right? But if I'm not even on the highway until taking different roads, I'm never going to get to my destination.
Well, why is it that? Like, if Hitler did chew a last second versus a person who decided that when he was very young and has been continuing through his whole life, why is it that they get the same outcome? How is it they get?
I'm not saying they do. There's obviously a different path. But we see with Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya, right? Rabbi cried and said, Yesh koneh olamo berega echad. Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya was, and then last minute, he did tshuva, right? And he's called Rabbi. Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya. So there is a value to doing tshuva the last second, but there's also something very powerful in the concept of that you're walking a path. You're taking a journey, right? So on one hand, tshuva is a second. You're getting on that highway. You know how many things are going to tell you to get off that highway? You know how many refreshments, exits there are going to be? Ooh, get off at this highway. There's a Starbucks. And get off at this refreshment area. And so many people get on the highway, and then they get off just for a refreshment. And they end up staying there their whole life. Right? Just get off. Just a little detour. Right? There's some traffic on the road. So I'm just going to take a little bypass, and then I never get back. So there's a very powerful concept. When we talk about tshuva, we have to talk about this idea of on one hand, it's a moment decision. On the other hand, it's a life path. And that's why in Judaism, tshuva is not something you do. It's a journey you embrace. So there is that daily tshuva of Yom Kippur that we spoke about last class, right? Yom Kippur is one facet of tshuva. One, in the highway, you know, in Israel, a highway has, you know, two lanes. What a chiddush. America, you have highways that have like 6-8 lanes.
They're putting a third on the one to your sign. What's it called?
Highway 2? Yeah, onto the Kvish Mispar Echad.
Yeah, Echad, right.
Right?
Yeah.
But there, in America, you have some highways that have 8 lanes. I mean, have you ever gone to Disneyland? That thing literally has 16 lanes.
I-95 has
just to,
three with trucks and then three with just cars.
Yeah, so I mean, almost as much as Disneyland, right? But it's right. So then there's the Yom Kippur lane. There's the carpool lane. Right. There's the toll free lane. Right. There's all these different lanes on the highway of tshuva. Rav Kook says if a person gets on the highway and he's doing tshuva, no matter even though there's so many things telling him, you get off the highway. Right. You know, sometimes you have this lady driving her, you know, car that's as old as she is, and the guy's like, "Lady, get off the highway. Everybody's going 90 miles. Like, why are you driving on 20?" And she's like, "I'm not in any hurry, you know. I mean, they call it Florida for a reason, right? You know, you know the symbol for Florida, right? A steering wheel with two knuckles. That's it. That's the Florida symbol, right? If you didn't get the joke, you didn't get the joke. It's not.
It.
It's
I
not.
Don't get it. Okay. I don't get it.
It's not mine. It's a Jerry Seinfeld one.
You go.
Oh wait. Okay,
you can't see their face.
It says. So not only is that person going to do tshuva, but all those things that should have stopped him from doing tshuva are not only gonna be, not only is he gonna do tshuva despite those things are gonna turn into great commodities that he did tshuva for, right? If a person, gives an example, if a person, despite his learning disabilities, I mean, that's crazy today, everybody has learning disabilities, graduated, that's greater than a person who graduated without any learning disabilities, right? You had so many things that were stopping you from learning.
Well, with the same grade.
And you still, right, and you still graduated, right? Or in today's world, you know, graduating without cheating. Like, that would be a crazy chiddush, right? Somebody who graduates college without cheating.
Why is that crazy? Every single person has all Jews. I'm with you.
I mean, it's not every single study. It just says
every
it's 87.
Single, I've never
study says 87%.
Wait, study, like, hold on. They cheat on the studies, though. You consider looking at old exams and homeworks cheating?
I don't consider anything because I didn't take this. I didn't do the study.
What do you mean cheating?
Whatever they decide is cheating. I don't know.
You don't remember all the conduct rules for the cheating?
When I used to be in exam room, whatever.
Doctor.
Whatever that's called, the guy who just sits in exam rooms
and gets
tons of money. So it was great. I just sit and do dafyomi. But I told my grandfather was an English teacher for many years, and he said to me, Yonatan, don't sit in the front of the class. Sit in the back middle table.
Why?
Because nobody knows who you're looking at. And if anybody looks back to see what you're looking at, they look really suspicious. So nobody can see if you're
not looking at anyone.
I'm not looking at everybody, I'm leaning my Gemara. But anybody who looks back to see is already arousing my suspicion. But nobody can see that I'm not looking at them, right? When I'm sitting in the front of the class, people can look up to their eyes and see that I'm not looking at them. But here, everybody assumes that I'm looking at them, right?
You also can't really see their eyes.
Right, but it's fine. I can totally see where they're looking and specifically where they're not looking, right?
Well, they don't turn their head to look.
So, right, I did it, and it was so good. Like, people literally, like people literally could not see that I'm not looking at them. I did catch two kids cheating, by the way. It was really funny. I said to the kid that cheated off his friend, I said I'm not going to tell the administration that you were cheating. I just want to let you know that your friend failed his test. I looked over his exam. He failed. Do you want to still hand in your paper? And the kid's like, no. I said, here's a brand new sheet. I did not look at his friend's test at all. I did not. I didn't know that.
Nice.
But he, I gave him a brand new sheet and he took his test. I did my job.
He did his job.
There you go.
But then if his friend got good answers and he took the test again, then he put down the same answers.
At least he got his own grade. Right? When I came home from school, my dad would say, "How much percent of this grade is yours?" I'd say 100%. He said, "Let's go out for pizza." I got 100, right? My dad couldn't care less what I got on the test, as long as 100% of the grade was mine.
Rob, I love that's a good mindset.
Right?
More parents are like that.
Oh, said it. Bears out the shame. My father should influence more people. So he said like this. ואז תהיה אורת תשובה למפרה הגדולה מאוד, ומתוך יציאת מן המיצר, מתוך עיכוב הגדולים, תפעל בכוח עוז וחזקה מאוד. You see, there's something really profound that we have to understand. The word in Hebrew for an obstacle, anybody know what a word for Hebrew for an obstacle is? Michshol is another word, right? But something that is a barrier, an obstacle, or it's stopping you from going somewhere, is a menia. Meniot, have you ever heard of the word meniot?
Like those police
menias.
Barriers.
Menias.
From the verb men.
So
what are those police barriers called? Like,
I'm not talking about modern Hebrew for a second. Menia is something that is monea. It's stopping you from doing something. It's an obstacle. It's a barrier. Now the crazy thing, the same word for an engine is manoa. Same exact word. See, something that's stopping you, once you get over the hump, not only is it not stopping you anymore, now it's
pushing you.
Exactly. Pushing you. It's motivating you. So in life, so many forces are pushing against you, and all they really want is for you to break through, and then they become your greatest motivator, right? So a person who has a little more on the heavier set, right? So overcoming food is a barrier for him. But then once he overcomes that barrier, that becomes his greatest motivator. I don't want to be as heavy as I used to be, right? Or so many things like that. So Rav Kook is saying, these 24 obstacles that are supposed to stop you from doing tshuva, if you don't let them stop you, not only are they going to not be an obstacle, they end up becoming your greatest motivator, right? So many people, why do they become better? Why do they become better? Because of what, my past, right? My past is my greatest motivator to become better, right? Why do I want to be better? Because of my past, right? So at the end of the day, Cook is telling us that when a person does push through these negative barriers, not only that, but on a greater level, these things start pushing you forward, start motivating you to be greater. And it says like this, V'tiye me'aminim ha'nivcharim shel tshuva, החותרים אל המחתרת לקבל את תשובתם של בעלי תשובה שאינם רואים לקבל כמנשה וחבריו כשם שבמקום שבעלי תשובה עומדים שם אין צדיקים גורים יכולים לעמוד. I want to tell a profound story before I explain this to Rav Kook. A father comes to the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh and says to him, Rebbe, my kid is dying. Doctors gave up all hope on him. He's dying. Please daven for him. Please, I'm begging you. Baal Shem Tov looks around at his students, says, okay, I'll be right back. Runs to this abandoned house, this abandoned factory where all the criminals hang out. All the thieves, all the bandits. He says to them, Chevra, I need your help. Mamash need to daven for this kid to be better. Follow me. And all these criminals, all these Jewish criminals, follow the Baal Shem Tov back to his Beit Midrash. They start davening. Baal Shem Tov says to Tehillim, they repeat word by word. Boom! Kid gets better. Baal Shem Tov says, thank you very much for your service. And they leave. And the Hasidim look at the Baal Shem Tov and say, Rebbe, we're so confused. We've been davening with you for years. We know the Kavanah of the Arizal that you taught us. We know everything. We're your closest people. You go to get these criminals, these bandits, these mamish lowlife people to daven for this kid? We're so lost. And the Baal Shem Tov said, Ay, Chevra, it's very simple. This kid, all the decrees in heaven were ready against him. There's no way to overturn this decree. The judge is ruled, the executioner is executed, all the doors were closed, all the chambers were sealed. There was nowhere to go. But there are some people in this world that when they see a closed door, they pick the lock. And when they see a judge who said no, they bribe him. And when they see executioners that are ready out to do their job, they make sure these people fall and stumble. So I needed those guys to help me break down this wall. You see, there's something so profound about criminals. They don't give a damn. And that's why the Balei Tshuva stand on a higher place than a tzaddik. Because when a tzaddik asks God for something, God says no, then the tzaddik says, respectfully, thank you. And when a criminal, God says no, you know what the criminal says? Say that again. Say that again. Right? Say it to my face. Have you met my two friends here? Right? So the Baal Shem Tov teaches something profound. You see, the Balei Tshuva, you know why they're on a such a greater level? They don't take no for an answer. Right? When God says to them, Chevra, I'm sorry, you missed the boat. The court's adjourned and you're going to Gehenna. You know what a true criminal says? How much is it going to cost me? How much is it going to cost me? What do you mean how much is it going to cost me? Just tell me. What is it going to cost? What is it going to cost? 1,000 per ketilim? 7,000 nates? Dipping in cold water? Tell me the price. Everything's got a price. That's the yofi of these kind of Balei Tshuva. Those 24 things that are supposed to stop you, they're only to test how great you are. And therefore, the criminals, they are on a much greater level. Because Kadosh Baruch Hu might say no. And the Hasidim of the Baal Shem Tov, when the door says, sorry, this kid has no hope, and they'll say, oh, we're sorry. But the criminals, you know what they say? What? This door's done? Court's adjourned? Who? What? Where? We're going to have a makeshift court right here in my basement. Here, Mr. Judge. Here. You're going to be the judge. Right? Yeah.
How does one not let... I mean, an idea that always like comes into my head when I hear things like this is that if it's better to be a Baal Tshuva, then why not like commit to like 5 years of like doing avera and then repent later? How do you not let that idea get in there? It's so much better to be a Baal Tshuva than a tzaddik now. So why should I start now? Why not go off, do averos, on a deep level?
Let's not be. Well, you know, if you take your gap year, as also as you know,
then 5 years, yeah.
Then five, but.
Well,
Portland. Was he at high school? Was he at high school or college?
Gap year. Give it. So there is a concept of taking a shot, getting a vaccine. We all experience these problems on a very small dose when we're young and we experience these things and we first come in contact with them. That is supposed to be our vaccination. There's a difference between getting a vaccine, so then when the real thing comes, you're healthy, then inducing yourself with full-on disease and hoping to get out of it. Yeah, is it better to battle cancer and then you're stronger, healthy? For sure. But who would put himself in that situation from the get-go?
This is different than tshuva, based on what you said.
No, why?
Why?
I'll tell you exactly why.
Please.
Because you can't tell yourself that when you'll be an underdog, you'll still have the same mindset. Right? Meaning, we said this, I said this 100 times. Missing a shot is great because you can then learn how to shoot better. Missing on purpose is never going to help you. Because when you miss on purpose, there's nothing to perfect. It's only when you miss, when you try to hit the basket and you miss, that then you can perfect the velocity and the angle and the, you know, breathing and the, you know, perception and vision and the follow through. But if you're missing on purpose, right? If you're, you know, standing with your back to the basket, 3, 2, 1, turn around, chuck up the ball. Like, that's not a practice.
Can I, being a kid.
So I just want to give an example. That's exactly what Chazal said. Ha'omer echta ve'ashuv. The person who says, I'll do sins and I'll do tshuva later. Ain't misav kim be'ado. Laso tshuva. He won't make it. When you say, I'm going to do it for 5 years, and you're going to do it for 6, 7. If you're doing it for 5 years and you do tshuva, imagine what you're going to do if you do it for 6 years and you're going to do tshuva. Right? Imagine what grade of a tzaddik you'll be if you do it for 10 years. You know what's going to happen?
You're going to be stuck.
That day's never going to come. That's what Chazal are saying.
Yeah.
Right? This is going to taste so good. Right? But you're not going to realize. It's going to be too late for you. Now, the Berdichever reads that whole Mishnah 180 degrees the other way. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berdichev reads that Mishnah 180 degrees. He says, a person whose mindset is Echta Ve'ashuv, no matter what sin is going to come my way, I'll do tshuva right away. Person says, Echta Ve'ashuv. No matter Yetzer Hara, no matter what you're going to do to me, I'm going to do tshuva. You're going to get me to kill. Don't care. I'm going to do tshuva. No. Saying the Yetzer Hara, you're going to get me to sin? You're just going to make me do tshuva. I'm never going to sin. And if I sin, I'll do tshuva. No matter what, you're never going to keep me down. I'll get right back up. Person has that mindset. Says, no matter what's going to happen, I'm going to do tshuva. Ein misapkim. The Berdichev doesn't read it. He won't be maspik. But ein misupakim. He changes the vowels. There's no suffix. There's no doubt. He'll do tshuva. If your mindset, it says, Mr. Yetzer Hara, no matter how low you think you can bring me, I'll just rise back up. No doubt. No doubt. But if you, and now there's a difference between Baki Baratza or Baki Bashov, which is Rabbi Nachman's Torah and Torah Vav, where you have to know how to kind of get a breather. There's time for a breather. There is a time where instead of going up, you're supposed to go down. But if that down is not going to be a strategic down, it will be a crash. Right? Right. So I told you that I was dating this girl. She was very, very, very frum. Very frum girl. And she said to me, in our first, we went on one date, so it can't be a first date. We went on one date. And she said to me, so tell me, because I was a shul meshiv in a yeshiva. She said to me, so tell me, what's your learning like? How much Torah learning are you doing? So I said, finally, a question that I like. I said, I finished. I learned so much. And I told her, I was boasting about how much I learned. She said, wait, you learn all of that? Every day, like on a yearly basis, you finish all those books? I said, yeah. She goes, how? I said, I don't know, it probably has to do with all the movies I watch. And he goes, you watch movies? I said, yeah, and television shows. She's like, what? You watch television? I said, yeah, you know, like I do like a couple of Gemara, then I need to like relax. I watch, you know, like an episode of Suits or an episode of, you know, Chicago Fire, you know? I watch some, you know, or sometimes like I was like stagging really hard, then I'll watch like a movie. And she looked at me, she goes, again. And I told her, and she's like, okay, I can't continue dating you. I'm sorry. It's too much for me to handle this.
She left after a date?
You have some
collision.
Dating stories.
She left in the middle of a date, Rob?
Yeah, I know. It was obvious that it was over. It was the end. It was the end when she left. It was the middle. Right?
Should have taken her to an airport. Good move.
What?
That's a different story.
Is it a different story? I don't get it.
Yeah.
Wait, have you actually done that? Why? Because of Yichud? That's like a move. Isn't that a classic Jew move?
No, that's like a hotel lobby.
Biggest Jew move ever.
No, when I dated this
guy. Hotel lobby.
No, I was set up with this girl. She was so frum. She said, I said to her, you want to go out? Do you want to meet like at a cafe? She's like, no, let's meet like at a hotel lobby. I'm like, on a first day, we're already going to a hotel lobby? You know, that's like a little extreme. I thought on the third day we could go to a hotel, you know? She did not like my jokes. That day did not go well.
How many stories do you have?
A lot. They're all one date wonders. Yes. Because I was like, came back, I'm like, nah, no. It's very simple. All the frum girls weren't cool. All the cool girls weren't frum. Yeah. It took time till I found the cool frum girl.
Oh, that's the best dating story you have.
I have a bunch.
Rev, can I?
I mean, there was a girl. There was a girl who asked to date me on YouTube. Does that count?
On YouTube.
I was interviewed on a radio for a television show, and I gave this like Gaval Torah, and then some girl wrote on a comment on YouTube. Is this guy single? So I wrote back, yeah, I'm single. Said, do you want to go out? And I said, yeah, this is gonna be a fantastic story.
Wait, what?
And then we met at the bus station, at the central bus station in Jerusalem. In Jerusalem. No, it's not there anymore. I don't know why. We met at the bus station in Jerusalem. We walked all the way to the hotel, and at the hotel, told her, okay, this is a cool story, but yeah, this is totally not, you're too like preppy and
Tinder.
Chappy for me and
YouTube, the precursor.
So forget about my stories because this is not.
Can I ask a question back on this topic?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for bringing us back to the
topic. Yeah, I'll rope it back in. So follow up to what I just asked then. Is it possible then to reinterpret the idea as, or maybe this is what it is, tell me if I'm wrong, but is it then that it's not that a Baal Tshuva is highest level is higher than the highest level that a normal person can get to, but it's that the Baal Tshuva, when he does tshuva, it's much greater than a normal person, so a normal person just has harder to work.
That's one explanation, but the other explanation is that he has more motivation, so he's going to go further, right?
Yeah, he's going to go immediately, but
right.
Then
the velocity of where he's starting
is much faster.
Right, and therefore, he's motivated.
But another
right?
person could get there still, though.
I mean, that's a machloket.
So that's what I'm asking.
It's a machloket understanding. In the Me'ah Shiloach, without a doubt, the tzaddik cannot reach the Baal Tshuva. Not only that, not only can the tzaddik not reach the Baal Tshuva, the Me'ah Shiloach explicitly says that the tzaddik will need the help of the Baal Tshuva to reach his full potential. Tzaddik cannot reach his full potential without the help of the Baal Tshuva.
Interesting.
Yeah.
They have a different experience.
Yes.
So then, where's the role of the tzaddik?
I mean, but here,
why should never be Baal Tshuva for that?
Wait. Here's the story, right? The Baal Shem Tov, who's the tzaddik, needs the help of the criminals, right?
Did these criminals become tzaddikim afterwards?
That's not the point.
They become Baal Tshuvas afterwards. The criminals become Baal Tshuvas.
That's not the point. The idea is that even the Baal Shem Tov, he knows what to say. But he doesn't know how to pick the lock.
But what about,
right?
What about
he needs
the
these guys to push their way through, and then he'll say what he can say.
Fine, that's
right.
It's a dual
system.
Yeah, but Rav, those are for the two extremes. That's for the super criminals and for the super tzaddikim.
Right.
Okay, but what about people who are benonim? How do you tell a person? Okay, if you're a Baal Tshuva, then you go to a certain place. But if you're a tzaddik, then you can only get this much level. Then how does somebody not, even if they know that the pitfalls of doing averos, how are they not okay with doing one avera here, one avera there?
There's no such thing as not doing averas.
Right, but big averas.
Everybody does big averas. Everybody does big averas. Yes, everybody's a Baal Tshuva, but there are different levels of Baal Tshuva.
Okay.
Right? Meaning we all strayed from the highway. If you remember last year, Rav Kook says, your soul is on an automatic pilot to its destination. And your ego is the pilot who's in the cockpit. Right? Who's constantly playing around with the controllers. Right? And therefore, you've strayed from the path, and you have to redirect the plane back to where it is. Now, depending on how much off the path you went, how much redirecting you need, and then how much velocity you need in order to make up the lost time. Right? So, Rav Kook is saying, the Baalei Tshuva who are not worthy of Tshuva, they're the people who have to work the hardest and push the furthest to get the tshuva. And it says like this, Afal pi shebiyadam hadvarim ha-me'akvim et ha-tshuva omdim, ein ba'alei tshuva pshutim yicholim la'amod sham, shehem nichshavim lagabei otam ba'alei tshuva shebao lashu biyadam hadvarim ha-me'akvim ta-tshuva, kmo tzadikim gmurim lagabei ba'alei ha-tshuva.
Right?
So there's different levels of tshuva depending on different levels of how many things are supposed to stop you from doing tshuva. If I say to you, listen, how can you do tshuva? You stole and never gave back the money. Okay? That's one thing. How can you do tshuva? You did a chil Hashem, right? How do you do tshuva? You right? And this is the kind of like what are you doing tshuva for? And a person says, you know, I killed. How can you tshuva? You kill somebody, right? That is a greater level. That person has to overcome tshuva on a much greater level, right? He has to push forth a lot more than the other person who can give the same amount of charity, right? Right, so there's different levels of how much I need to push through the barriers, and how much the barriers need to then push me through. Right, so Rav Kook is saying that that these things that are quote unquote the Rambam list as the 24 things that should stop you from doing tshuva, these things are not supposed to stop you, but rather they're supposed to propel you, right? Because you have a greater potential, right, of becoming of doing things that are great, right? It's Rabbi Akiva, the rabbi of all the rabbis, who before he was religious said, you know, give me a rabbi and I'll bite him like a donkey. Right? And the Gemara says, why did Rabbi Akiva say bite you like a donkey? Why didn't he say bite you like a dog? And the Gemara answers, because a dog rips your flesh, a donkey breaks your bone. Right? So Rabbi Akiva, he's the one who totally hated rabbis, despised them. And then when he becomes a rabbi, that's how he can to all of a sudden be the rabbi of all the rabbis. Right? It's that 180. So the 180 is only as great as the way you're coming from to where you're going, right? So that's what Rav Soloveitchik once said. To do a 180 is the easiest thing in the world. You just turn in place, okay? Just change your perception from where you're looking to exactly the other perception, right? וכמו שהדין נוהג בתשובה, כן הוא נוהג בתפילה. ישנם דברים המעכבים את התפילה, ומי שנדמה לו שכל אלה הם בידו, ומכל מקום הוא אוחז בחזקה ביסוד התפילה, והוא קורא לדעת בכל עת, סופו שיסורו ממנו כל הדברים המעכבים. Cook says the same way there are things that are stopping you from doing tshuva, there are things that are stopping you from davening. You're going to daven? Excuse me. That mouth is going to speak God's praise? Right? Yeah? You're going to go to davening? Remember what happened last night? We're done? That was it? Put the past in the past and now you're fine? You're going to be davening? What are you talking about? You're going to daven? Right? Those things are supposed to stop you. There's a famous Torah in Rabbi Nachman that Rabbi Nachman speaks about, the Chelbina. The Chelbina is one of the 11 spices in the Ketoret. Chelbina smells really bad. Really bad. Yet you put it in to the Ketoret, and with the other 10 fragrance, I don't know, with the other 10 fragrance, it enhances it so much and it all smells good. And Rabbi Nachman says, a tefillah that doesn't have Chelbina is not a tefillah. Right? Chazal says, what's a tzibur? Tzibur is an acronym for what? Tzadikim, benonim, ve reshaim. Right? Without the reshaim, it's not a tzibur. It's not a tzibur. Just a tzav, turtle. But it's only with the reshaim can you be a tzibur. Wow. Right? You can't be a tzibur. You're not a congregation unless you have the whole spectrum. Right? And therefore, you know, Rabbi Nachman said, if you're not the chelbina, so you should daven. If you're the Chelbina, it's only because of you that this whole tefillah is even, right, worthy. I remember I used to come to Shona, I'm like, what's up guys? Chelbina's here, right? And it's only because of me, right? It's only because of all the bad thoughts that I have that this tefillah is contrasted, right? I used to always think that when I was starting my process, my journey on the highway.
You actually thought that?
Yeah, I would say like, wow, what a contrast is my thoughts creating now, right? I used to sit like four rows behind my Rebbe. And I'm like, wow, you know what he's thinking about? You know what I'm thinking about? I'm enhancing his tefillah, right? Look at what contrast, right?
But also his tefillah might not be as super pure as you think they are.
Thank you, Shlomo. Thank you. Yes, you're
I'm
right.
Saying, you're, I'm saying, even the bigger...
Yes, yes, saying, he's really the Chelbina, right? He's
that's not what I'm saying.
Shlomo, we got it. But right, but that's what Rabbi Nachman's saying. The Chelbina has bad fragrance to contrast all the other smells. So there's so many things that are telling you, you can't go to shul, you can't daven. Who you're going to put on tefillin? That hand, right? I remember I once said to my Rebbe, that hand is going to put on tefillin? And he goes, specifically that hand. And I was like, why? He goes, well, so it's not the only thing that hand is doing. And I was like, oh, okay. Got it.
Wow.
Makes sense. Right?
What do you mean, wait?
He's processing. It's fine. Right? But it's the contrast. It's the contrast. So the same way, there are things that are stopping you from doing tshuva, and their goal is to contrast the other stuff. And tefillah, the same thing. Rav Kook ends and says, Ve'az or ha-tefillah haba mitoch ha-dvarim ha-me'akvim holechu le-meisharim b'chayil gadol. Then the light of tefillah emerges. Be'gvura shel mala. And this paves the way for all the other tefillahs that have been discarded along the way. Right? Imagine all those other tefillahs that haven't come because, you know, you're going to daven. All of a sudden they go, wait. He's davening. I cannot. Me too. Right? Me too. I can't. Right? There was this guy in Israel who's a big criminal. He's known to be like a big criminal. Israel's been has been trying to get him in prison for a while. Eventually they got him in prison. He's a big criminal. Not like he admitted he was like a mafia, head of the mafia, and one of the head of the mafias in Israel. Bad guy. My friend told me that he was once in Uman, and all of a sudden this guy came in to daven and Rabbi Nachman. And he came, he davened, and he left, and then there was a big discussion. People like, what is this? Why is this guy coming here? What do you think he is? And one of the guys spoke to him and goes, Dafka here, he's accepted. Right? I mean, anywhere else, he might not be able to daven, but Dafka here. Right? Specifically, the contrast, there's a crazy midrash. We're going to end with this. The crazy midrash says something phenomenal. It says, Tzadik katan, ohev reshaim katani. Tzadik gadol, ohev reshaim gdolim.
Wow.
Mashiach, ohev reshaim gmurim. Why? What does that mean? Right? So I told a story once, but I'll say it again. When I was in yeshiva learning, so one time these two kids, I was in Bahrain. Bahrain is like totally secluded in the middle of like Arab areas or whatever. Like, and these two kids went and they, at 2 in the morning, they like blew up so many firecrackers, everybody thought there was like a terrorist attack. Police came, army came, it was crazy. Nobody found these two kids. But it was a crazy night. I remember it was like people like totally, like no one slept. And the Rosh Yeshiva Renata said, we have to find those two kids. We have to give them a patch. But then we have to bring into the base midrash because those kind of people we need here. Right? Fearless ideas. Have you ever heard of that turtle? But it's only, if there's no Rashaim, it's only a tzav. Right? You need a tzibur. Right? You have to fire the coach, the head coach, and then resign early and go into retirement. The nekuda of the idea of Rav Kook is saying is that at the end of the day, you know, if so-and-so can do tshuva, then so can I. Right? If so-and-so can do tshuva, so can I. If Rabbi Akiva can change 180 degrees, so can I. If Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya can do tshuva, Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya. Lo haita zonah shelo heniach. Right? Imagine there's one guy here that there's no prostitute he hasn't been by. That's a crazy record. Right? That's a crazy record. Right? And yet he did tshuva.
But a criminal could affect, like what if a child predator comes into a shul with kids? So too with this criminal coming in, he could harm the people.
Right. So again, I'm not a judge to know who did real tshuva or not real tshuva, etc. But let's talk about it on the concepts level, right? So if Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya has been at every prostitute in the world and he did tshuva, so listen, I haven't been at every prostitute. You know, 80%, 90%. There's still some, you know, some that I haven't gotten to, right? I don't have the dough to get to them. They're mamish, right? But so if he did it, I can do it. Right? So I'm not talking about, you know, how do we understand Bali Tshuva and criminals and etc. and how the world deals with people who are already in the system and convicted felons, and do we really believe in Tshuva in the Western society? And that's a different story because the answer is no and it's sad. But the contrast.
Theoretically.
Right, the contrast that is created. Rav Kook says, when that tefillah goes up, everybody else jumps along and goes, wait, that tefillah is going up? We can also go up. And then it sweeps up all the other tefillahs that have given up halfway. Said, I can't do, yeah? You start davening and then the Yetzer Hara says to you, after last night, you're going to daven? That you gave up. So that tefillah is somewhere parked along the highway. But imagine, you're driving on a highway, there's all these cars on the side that just gave up on the middle of the highway. And all of a sudden comes this crazy huge truck that has like, I don't know, 3 billion Tesla power, right? And it has like this huge chain, like magnetic, and all these cars are like magnetized to it and like follow single file, and like it's pulling them along the highway. It's phenomenal. Min hameitzar karatiya anani bar merchavya. Hashem li lo ira mayase li adem. Hashem be'ozrai ve'ani ere besonai. In the narrow I call out to you. I will not fear because God's on my side. It's not that I have to convince God. I have to convince myself. And therefore, all these things that are supposed to stop me from davening, their goal is not to stop me from davening. Be'emes. Their goal, be'emes, is to motivate me to persevere. And when I persevere, I do justice to those things. And not only do those things stop becoming a mania, become a manoa. Not only do they stop becoming a barrier, they become a motivator. Shabbat shalom.